I want you to imagine, just for a second, stepping onto a military base.
Okay.
You are immediately immersed in this environment that's completely defined by strict rank, right?
Oh, totally.
By an unyielding chain of command and, you know, the unquestionable execution of direct orders.
Yeah, hierarchy isn't just a concept there. It's literally worn on your sleeve.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So now imagine walking right up to a superior officer, sitting down behind closed doors and telling them that you are struggling.
Oh, wow.
Like you tell them you're deeply unsure about your career path or that you're just feeling completely burned out.
Which is a huge admission.
It is. And yeah. Imagine doing all of that without even a fraction of a fear that this vulnerability is going to end up on your next performance review.
I mean, that sounds fundamentally at odds with everything we assume about military culture.
Right.
The very nature of a military structure seems designed to prevent exactly that kind of unguarded conversation. Positional authority usually demands a certain level of stoicism.
Yeah, showing doubt is historically viewed as a huge liability.
Exactly.
But that tension is exactly what we're dissecting today. Welcome back to our continued deep dive into the Royal New Zealand Air Force, or RNZAF, mentoring program.
It's good to be back.
In our previous discussions, we looked at how they built a system of mentoring without ranks and how that shifted their traditions.
Yeah.
Today, we are focusing on pure conceptual clarity. We're going to unpack exactly how this organization defines mentoring, proving how they've built a system rooted in the philosophy of relationship over advice.
And, you know, if we look at the broader implications here, the stakes extend way beyond the military.
Oh, absolutely.
Whether you are managing a small team, navigating the corporate ladder, or just trying to figure out your own trajectory, understanding how a rigid structure successfully redefined human connection is incredibly valuable.
It's a total game changer.
They recognize that the old models of professional development were just fundamentally flawed, and they built something entirely different.
So to understand how they do it differently, we kind of first have to unlearn what we assume mentoring actually is.
Right, because we get it wrong a lot.
We do. Most of us use the words mentoring, coaching, and managing interchangeably.
Like they're all just different flavors of giving instruction.
Exactly. But the sources for this deep dive make a really rigorous distinction between these roles.
They really do. The RNZAF anchors its program in a specific framework.
The EMCC.
Yes, the European Mentoring and Coaching Council. Their definition of mentoring is super specific. They describe it as a learning relationship, emphasizing the sharing of skills, knowledge, and expertise.
Okay, that sounds pretty standard so far.
But here is the critical phrase. Mentoring must be an inclusive two-way partnership for mutual learning. It isn't just a transactional download of information from a senior person to a junior person.
I really want to dig into that distinction between mentoring and coaching because the handbook goes out of its way to draw a hard line there.
It's a very firm line.
The first major difference they highlight is relationship versus goal orientation.
Think about the mechanics of coaching. Coaching is highly goal oriented. If your company hires a coach for you, it's usually because there's a specific measurable outcome they want to see, or a very specific competency you need to develop for your current job.
Mentoring, conversely, is relationship oriented.
Exactly. The metric of success isn't hitting a quarterly target. It's establishing a safe space to discuss broad, holistic life and career issues.
It kind of brings to mind an analogy.
Let's hear it.
So coaching feels a bit like hiring a personal trainer to prep you for a specific 5K race.
Okay, yeah.
The relationship is goal-oriented, it's driven entirely by performance metrics, and the partnership naturally dissolves the moment you cross that finish line.
Which makes sense for a coach.
Right. But a mentor acts more like a seasoned runner who agrees to walk alongside you, not to tell you how to sprint, but to help you figure out why you even signed up for the race in the first place.
That captures the dynamic perfectly. That mechanism actually leads to their next distinction, which is development versus performance.
Okay, unpack that for me.
Coaching is entirely focused on improving your performance right now, today, in your current seat. Mentoring is development-driven. It's about preparing you for future growth.
For roles that might not even exist yet.
Exactly. Which explains why the initiation process is so different.
Because if you're struggling with a specific task, your line manager might initiate a coaching intervention.
Right. But the mentoring in this program is strictly voluntary, and it has to be initiated by the mentee.
It's totally driven by the individual.
It has to be. And the rule they enforce most strictly is that mentoring requires a non-directive approach.
Non-directive. What does that look like in practice?
A mentor in this framework is explicitly forbidden from telling a mentee what they, you know, should do.
Wow.
They state very clearly that mentoring is never remedial training for poor performance. If someone is failing to meet the basic standards of their job, that is a line management issue.
It's not a mentoring issue.
Exactly.
And wait, I'm trying to reconcile that with standard corporate practice.
Yeah, it's a shift.
Because the whole point of seeking out a senior person is usually to get their advice. If a mentor isn't giving direct advice, and they aren't offering step-by-step solutions to fix a problem, aren't they just acting as like an overly qualified sounding board?
It can feel that way at first.
Where is the expertise actually being applied if they are constantly holding back the answers?
That is the absolute hardest habit for new mentors to break.
I bet.
When you have decades of experience, your instinct is to just jump in and fix the problem for the junior person.
Of course. It's human nature.
But in this model, the mentor's expertise isn't used to dictate solutions. It's used to architect the conversation.
Architect the conversation.
Yeah, they rely on specific psychological frameworks to do this rather than just giving advice.
But if a mentor's entire job is to foster independent, autonomous thinking, that fundamentally clashes with a military commander's job, right?
It really does.
A commander's job is ensuring strict compliance and operational uniformity. So where does this independent thinking actually happen safely within a rigid hierarchy?
It survives because the RNZAF made the radical decision to structurally sever the mentoring relationship from the military hierarchy.
Okay, that's huge.
They identified what organizational psychologists call role conflict.
Meaning you cannot simultaneously play the role of judge and confidant.
Right. You cannot be someone's commanding officer, the person writing their performance evaluations and determining their promotions, and also be the safe space for their deepest professional insecurities.
Because the psychological safety completely evaporates if the mentee thinks their admissions of struggle will be held against them.
Exactly. The vulnerability required for true mentoring just can't exist in the chain of command.
I would imagine military commanders would absolutely hate this.
Oh, they were very skeptical.
If you're a commander responsible for the readiness of your unit, having your subordinates air their grievances in secret to an officer from another department sounds like a recipe for undermining authority.
It sounds terrifying to a traditional leader.
Did the RNZAF face a massive backlash when they implemented this level of secrecy?
Well, when the program launched its initial pilot back in 2008, there was intense skepticism from leadership. Commanders are used to total visibility.
Right.
But the program's rules on privacy are absolute. A line manager is only informed that their direct report is in the program so they can allocate time for the meetings.
So they just approve the calendar invite.
Pretty much. They are strictly forbidden from asking the mentor for updates on the mentee's progress or state of mind.
How did they convince leadership to accept that blind spot?
By proving the mechanism of preventative maintenance.
Preventative maintenance. I like that.
What commanders quickly realized was that creating a space free from consequence allowed personnel to process their burnout, their conflicts, or career doubts long before those struggles manifested as actual performance failures.
I see. So the commander loses visibility into the process, but the product they get back is a subordinate who has already worked through their crisis.
Exactly. The military benefits immensely because the program acts as a pressure valve. It returns a more resilient, focused individual back to the chain of command.
That makes total sense.
It relies on a global insight that the sources highlight repeatedly. This entire model rests on the organizational admission that leadership does not equal mentorship.
That is a really profound distinction.
Yeah, it's a tough pill to swallow for some.
Because you can be an exceptional tactical leader, but that doesn't mean you possess the psychological distance or the coaching skill set to be a mentor for your own direct reports.
Precisely. And the sources detail a fascinating historical moment from that 2008 pilot program that really cemented this break from traditional authority.
Oh, you're thinking of the dress code for the initial training workshop.
Yes, the civilian attire.
When they gathered the first cohort of personnel to train them in these non-directive techniques, they mandated that everyone attend in civilian clothes.
Which, in a military context, is a massive psychological disruption.
Right. Stripping away the uniform completely removes the visual architecture of the hierarchy.
It was a highly calculated choice. You couldn't look at someone's shoulders to see if they were a warrant officer or a corporal. You couldn't see their medals.
You were forced to just interact with the human being sitting across from you.
Exactly. It laid the foundation for the core philosophy. In a mentoring space, positional authority is entirely replaced by human connection.
Because they successfully removed that barrier of rank, it seems like it broke open the traditional architecture of who is allowed to talk to whom.
Oh, it opened the floodgates.
If mentorship is no longer tied to the chain of command, you're no longer restricted to the archaic model of an older person in your department passing down trade secrets.
Right. That structural decoupling allowed the RNZAF to deploy highly diverse styles of mentoring. They immediately started matching people across different trades.
Like an avionics technician might be mentored by a logistics officer.
Exactly, which completely breaks down institutional silos.
But the structural shift that really stands out is their use of external peer mentoring.
This is one of my favorite parts of the program.
They partner their military personnel with peers from civilian corporate organizations in New Zealand, like the accounting firm KPMG or the engineering consultancy Tonkin plus Taylor.
It is a brilliant way to prevent an institutional echo chamber.
But let's look at the mechanics of that for a second.
Sure.
What does a corporate accountant at KPMG actually have to offer a combat engineer or a military pilot? Their day-to-day hard skills have zero overlap.
Right. How do they bridge that gap?
Exactly.
Because they aren't meeting to discuss hard skills. Mentoring is about holistic development.
Ah, okay.
While a KPMG accountant and a military pilot execute very different tasks, the human and leadership challenges they face are nearly identical.
Like what?
Well, they both deal with severe burnout, navigating complex organizational politics, managing resource allocation under pressure, and, you know, trying to maintain team morale during a crisis.
And because the corporate peer has absolutely no stake in the military's internal politics, they can offer incredibly pure, unbiased perspectives on those leadership challenges.
Exactly. And the cross-pollination works both ways. The corporate sector learns from the military's approach to high-stakes decision-making, and the military personnel absorb corporate agility.
That's amazing. But if external mentoring breaks down industry walls, their implementation of reverse mentoring completely upends the generational power dynamic.
Reverse mentoring.
Yeah.
It takes immense humility from the senior leadership to make that work.
The concept is fascinating. We're talking about senior personnel, highly decorated, high-ranking individuals acting as the mentees and being matched with junior, much younger personnel who serve as their mentors.
It's incredible to visualize.
But how does that actually play out in a room? Picture a 4-star general pulling up a chair across from a 22-year-old new recruit.
Yeah.
What is the 22-year-old actually mentoring them on?
It goes back to that EMCC definition of an inclusive two-way partnership. The military recognizes that experience is not strictly chronological.
Just because you have the years doesn't mean you have all the answers.
Exactly. Just because a commander has served for 30 years does not mean they understand how the newest generation of recruits views work-life balance or how they process digital information.
Or what their expectations are for mental health support.
Right. So the junior mentor helps the senior leader conceptualize the cultural shifts happening at the bottom of the hierarchy.
That is so smart. It allows the senior leadership to stay culturally relevant and adaptable.
While simultaneously proving to the junior personnel that their lived experience is valued as a strategic asset.
That brings up a critical question, though.
What's that?
We've dissected the structural decoupling and the diverse matching styles, but why does this work so seamlessly in New Zealand?
Context is everything.
Right, because implementing a system that demands absolute equality, deep vulnerability, and reverse hierarchies would fail spectacularly in many rigid corporate cultures.
It really would.
The sources make a compelling case that this succeeds because it's anchored to the unique cultural bedrock of New Zealand itself.
You really cannot separate the success of this program from the societal context it operates within.
How so?
Well, New Zealand is fundamentally a bicultural society. The modern nation's foundational history is built upon an 1840 treaty.
Okay.
And that treaty established a formal, recognized partnership between the indigenous people of the land and the British Crown.
The operative word there being partnership.
Yes. The cultural expectation set by that founding document is one of a true partnership of equals, where both entities are expected to bring mutual respect, equal value, and a commitment to walking forward together.
So it's baked into the national identity.
Completely. The RNZAF mentoring program doesn't just mimic corporate HR trends. It intentionally mirrors this deep national cultural expectation.
When a mentor and mentee sit down, the societal baseline is already set for an equal partnership, regardless of the insignia on their uniforms.
Exactly.
The handbook also dedicates significant space to the profound cultural importance of ancestry and genealogy in New Zealand.
It's a huge part of their framework.
There's this deeply embedded societal belief that you are not just a solitary individual navigating the world. You are the culmination of everyone who came before you.
Right. Your roots connect you to your past, ground you in the present, and inform your future.
The mentoring program completely integrates this philosophy by focusing on what they call the whole person.
They don't just treat you as a military asset.
But how does that philosophical concept actually manifest in a mentoring session? Do they just like acknowledge it and then move on to career goals?
No, it forms the entire foundation of the relationship.
Really?
Yeah, in many of these mentoring pairings, the first several sessions might not touch on military strategy or career progression at all.
Wow.
A mentor and mentee will literally spend hours mapping out their backgrounds, discussing their family histories, and identifying their community ties.
Just getting to know the human being.
Exactly. The RNZAF operates on the belief that a mentor cannot possibly help you chart where your career is going until they deeply understand the cultural and personal foundation you are standing on.
I have to pause on that because standardizing personnel is the historical backbone of a military.
It's usually all about uniformity.
Right. The traditional logic is that uniformity breeds efficiency. You all wear the same uniform, you operate on the same schedule, you strip away your individuality to serve the unit.
That's the classic military trope.
But here, the RNZAF is explicitly arguing that celebrating an individual's unique ancestry and exploring their diverse background is a strategic operational advantage.
It's a total paradigm shift.
Why would a high-stakes military organization want you to hold on to your individuality?
Because the nature of warfare and operational stress has changed. When individuals feel that their true identity, their heritage, and their unique perspectives are genuinely valued by the monolithic organization they serve, it builds an incredibly powerful psychological sense of belonging.
And belonging mitigates burnout.
Exactly. In a high-stakes, high-stress environment, you don't just need people who follow orders. You need people with the internal fortitude to adapt when the plan fails.
That makes a lot of sense.
This deep cultural grounding creates the ultimate foundation for resilience. If you know who you are and you know your organization respects the whole person, your commitment to the mission and to your peers becomes highly resilient.
It transforms personnel from standardized military assets into deeply rooted human beings.
And they take this cultural integration so seriously that they don't just leave it up to chance.
Right, they have a whole department for it.
Yes, they have the Directorate of People and Culture act as what the sources call a guardian for the personnel.
The term guardian is very intentional.
It really is. Their role is not traditional human resources or compliance monitoring. They are actively tasked with protecting and nurturing that diversity, inclusion, and cultural empowerment.
They act as the safeguard to ensure that as the mentoring program scales and evolves, it never drifts away from that cultural anchor.
Precisely.
When you step back and look at the RNZAF's entire architecture of mentoring, it's really a masterclass in re-engineering human development.
It really is.
It's about having the structural courage to completely sever personal development from the chain of command, performance reviews, and disciplinary action.
It requires an organization to admit that positional authority is not a prerequisite for wisdom.
That's a great way to put it.
It's about recognizing that true leadership sometimes means having the humility to step entirely out of the hierarchy, to take off the uniform of authority, and to simply walk alongside someone as an equal.
So as we conclude this conceptual deep dive, I want to leave you with a provocative thought.
Let's hear it.
We've just explored how one of the most traditionally rigid hierarchical structures in the world, a military successfully separated line management from personal development to unlock the true potential of its people.
Yeah.
Look at your own workplace. Look at the architecture of your own career. What would actually happen if your company completely decoupled your performance reviews from your personal growth conversations?
Imagine if the person tasked with evaluating your quarterly output was entirely separated from the person guiding your internal long-term development.
Could introducing a little strategic separation, you know, a wall of intentional secrecy between your managers and your mentors, actually be the key to creating a stronger, more honest, and more resilient team?
It's definitely something to think about.
Think about who is evaluating your performance today and who is walking alongside you. Are they the same person? And after listening to this, do you think they should be? Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Keep questioning the structures around you, and we will catch you next time.